Cook County Assessor Fritz Kagi gets endorsements from Duckworth and U.S. Reps. And apartments and warehouses are driving commercial property sales, but Chicago deals trail behind the rest of the country this year. I'll talk with Crane's commercial real estate reporter Danny Ecker for more.
There's still a pretty blurry picture about how do you value, first of all, these properties coming out of the pandemic, and really how is their use going to change perhaps for good?
I'm Amy Guth, and this is Crane's Daily Gist for Tuesday, October 19th. In these uncertain times, it's important to have people you trust by your side. When 11,000 local business owners needed a Paycheck Protection Program loan, they turned to their Wintrust banker to secure funding, because that's a relationship they can count on. Businesses are navigating some of the biggest challenges they will ever face. Wintrust is here to answer their calls. They'll answer yours too. Start the conversation at wintrust.com/dailygist. Member FDIC. Apartments and warehouses are driving up local commercial property sales, but Chicago dealmaking is a bit behind the rest of the country this year. I'm joined by Crane's commercial real estate reporter, Danny Ecker, who's reporting this story in detail. So, Danny, tell me what's going on here versus nationally.
Well, people are buying commercial properties again here like they are nationally this year compared with last year, obviously when things were way, way down. But it's been much slower here than it has been nationally, which I think to most people doesn't come as that much of a surprise. I think the recovery from 2020 has been much slower when it comes to commercial real estate for large cities than it has been for other parts of the country. Just think of large, dense urban areas. It just makes sense that those areas would be the last to come back from a pandemic for many reasons. But Chicago certainly has unique aspects in that we are also dealing with, you know, the first time that downtown properties are being reassessed under Cook County Assessor Fritz Kagi, which has already shown in the northern suburbs and the southwestern suburbs made a huge impact on the value of commercial properties and the taxes of commercial properties over the past couple of years. So there's kind of this question mark hanging over Chicago for many investors that aren't here, and those who are that are here that may also be keeping some of the numbers down. But generally speaking, we're seeing some numbers start to come back. And the places where people are buying are the safer bets, so to speak. You know, the areas, warehouses and apartments that have actually shown really strong. I mean, warehouses really never got hurt by this pandemic, but apartments have come back strong, whereas everything else is just slow, down in some cases even from 2020. So generally speaking, it's people are buying again, but they're flocking to the safer investments.
As you've noted in your reporting, it's very particular to type, as you said, apartments and warehouses and whatnot. Is that carrying through nationally, or does the type vary by region?
As far as industrial properties, you know, warehouses, that's happening across the board. And that was really a pre-pandemic trend that has just been accelerated by this crisis, which is everyone buying everything online. Companies need to adjust and find places to store and distribute goods. And therefore, a nondescript warehouse that is well located is worth a lot of money. And that's been just where a lot of money has flowed. And so that's been really happening across the board nationally. Apartments, those have also been strong nationally. But in Chicago, it's been just, you know, really remarkable when you look at what it was last year in terms of sales volume versus this year. We actually, through the first 8 months of 2021, the total volume, sales volume of apartments in the Chicago area actually surpassed the entire full year volume of the Chicago area in 2020. And it's already trending ahead of 2019 levels. So that's been remarkably strong as well. And on the national side, it's also been up over 2019 levels. So those have been just very popular places that people feel like we know what is going to happen here on the other side of the pandemic. Whereas offices and retail and hotels, there's still a pretty blurry picture about how do you value, first of all, these properties coming out of the pandemic, and really how is their use going to change perhaps for good?
When did you start to notice apartments kind of making a comeback? Because I feel like you and I have talked about real estate so many times and different sectors of commercial real estate throughout the pandemic and how they've been impacted. And for a while, it seemed like it was really looking down for apartments. When did you start to notice that shift?
You know, earlier this year, I mean, Albi Galoon obviously has reported a lot on the rents that apartments were able to command and, you know, the concessions that were really sky high last year as you know, these apartment owners were trying to entice people to come in and they'd take a bunch of free rent, far more, you know, record amounts of free rent to get them in the door. And those, I think early in this year, as we started to see the vaccination rate climb and you had more people feeling more confident and actually more people that were feeling like this summer and fall were going to be the time to come back to offices. And if they, you know, that you had people maybe that had left their apartments, whether they lived in the suburbs or somewhere else, and then they were ready to come back. And the signs of that started earlier in the year and that demand was coming back. So then I think we started to see more transactions happen. And for what it's worth, most of the transactions have been in the suburbs as opposed to downtown this year, mostly because of the Fritz Keegi factor that I mentioned. It's you know, apartment buildings, that's a direct hit to the bottom line when you think about a big property tax hike. So that's a big question hovering over downtown apartments. So without that, I mean, these could be even higher, you know, what the downtown apartment comeback here. So it was really kind of maybe spring that I feel like the first signs of that were really starting to show. And then, you know, as we got into later summer, the numbers were showing that we had really come back all the way to pre-pandemic levels of demand for apartments and we're really almost surpassing that. So I don't know how sustainable that is because some of that might have just been we lost a lot and so we gained a lot back, but it's looking really, really good right now. If you're, you know, you probably feel really good if you're a downtown apartment owner. And Albi actually wrote this week about a lot of new apartments that are now under construction because there's financing for them and they look like good bets.
Yeah, you already touched on something I was going to ask you next about how that is the distribution pretty even from city to suburbs, but it seems like both with warehouses and apartments, it's pretty much favoring the suburbs.
Yeah, and I think warehouses in the city, those are actually done quite well as well. I mean, you think about one of the biggest deals we saw this year was on Goose Island. There was a nearly $100 million deal. And it's all about just the location. If you have a big warehouse that can store things that would be connected to a lot of people in a relatively close area, sort of a so-called last mile distribution facility for stuff that's bought online, that's, you know, that is worth a lot of money. And the rents for that are high, which means the value that investors place on it is high. So that's really been across the board. I don't think that has been, you know, suburbs or city, one thing or another, but apartments certainly has been far more in the suburbs. And the questions of downtown, that's not just apartments, that's hanging over offices, that's hanging over a bunch of different property types. When you think about this reassessment of downtown properties, it's going to be at least another year before there's some clarity to that, to have a sense of what are the taxes going to be on this building, because they could vary widely now, as has been shown by the first two reassessments that KE has done.
And when it comes to warehouses, are there subcategories of warehouses that you're following? I mean, I know you had looked at kind of offices for logistics companies that are working very closely with warehouses, but is it pretty much just warehouses across the board, or are they divided at all?
You know, I think there's different kinds. Certainly there's different niches within that general category, but, you know, we've seen cold storage facilities that have sold for a lot of money. We've seen, you know, smaller last mile distribution centers. We've seen massive warehouses in the Chicago area that have sold for really eye-popping numbers. So it's not really like there's an area of the industrial sector that's struggling right now. I think it's just, you know, right now, if you can't build these warehouses fast enough. I mean, as Amazon has proven, they're just buying and building and partnering with developers to create as fast as they can this sort of network around the Chicago area to serve customers.
Yeah, I think it'll be so interesting to look back like maybe a year from now and look back and just look at all the data and the story that it will tell about the pandemic time and how consumer habits changed and commercial real estate changed with it.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I it's still just so fascinating to know how offices in particular are going to play out. You know, I mean, there have been some deals. I mean, there have been investors that have purchased office buildings downtown and in the suburbs over the past 18 months, but they're making a significant gamble there. I mean, they're having to buy fairly low at a low number, relatively speaking, to justify it. But no one really knows what the full net impact is going to be on the local office market, on the office market overall. But locally, when you think about whether companies collectively over the next few years are going to have a significant downsizing of their space. I mean, there are expansions, there are renewals of the same space, but you know, is the net going to be a significant cutback in space? What does that mean for all the vacancy that's in the market? You know, does that mean you have likely have to have older buildings that are repurposed for other things to kind of tighten up the market a little bit? But despite the fact that we are, 19 months into this crisis, I mean, we're still ways away from really knowing what the fallout of the office impact is here. You know, it could be years before we really look back and feel like we can see the whole picture.
And I can't help but wonder about some of the mega developments that, that you've been writing about. You know, prior to the pandemic, there were just seemed like full steam ahead and so much gusto for them. Do you get the sense that there's kind of a rethinking of any of the, at least office plans that were connected to any of those?
I think that they kind of provide the sort of blank slate for some possible users right now because they had plenty of momentum in terms of, you know, getting the city approvals that they needed. But since then, we haven't really seen much in terms of things like Lincoln Yards and the 78 and the redevelopment of the Michael Reese Hospital site, you know, just south of McCormick Place. They all have their own little bits of wind in their sails. When you think of the 78 is you know, likely going to be the home of at some point here of the Discovery Partners Institute with U of I. So that could be a nice anchor for the south side of that site. It's also a pretty significant candidate to be the site of the Chicago casino, and that could be a piece of the puzzle for them. Lincoln Yards, that's probably where the biggest pivot has been, going from saying, well, this is going to be a big office destination, which it still could be, to focusing so much more on life sciences. Sterling Bay just bought, just broke ground rather, on the first building at Lincoln Yards, and it's a big lab space building. And they're expecting that, you know, lab buildings, life sciences companies could make up a decent portion of the Lincoln Yards campus when all is said and done. So that's been a pivot during COVID. And then, you know, the Michael Reese site, we know it's going to be anchored by a life sciences component through this partnership with Sheba Medical Center out of Israel, that they're building a big building there. And that one, again, if you were looking at, hey, let's build a bunch of office buildings before the pandemic, you're not doing that now. I mean, it's just such a risk. There are offices still being built, but mostly in Fulton Market and other areas that are, you know, smaller bites at that.
Yeah, indeed. All right. Well, thanks so much for checking in and catching us up. Appreciate your time today.
Sure thing. Thanks, Amy.
Coming up, the biggest change to travel since the pandemic began is on the horizon as the U.S. plans to open its borders to vaccinated travelers next month. We'll talk about that and more right after this. Is your student taking the SAT, ACT, or a high school admissions test this year? Academic Approach wants to help them get prepared. Academic Approach's time-tested tutoring programs ensure students grow their academic skills, improving their performance on standardized tests. The work together begins with a consultation with an Academic Approach director who will meet with you and your student to discuss their unique needs. Then Academic Approach creates an effective, fully customized study plan that targets their goals and matches them with a tutor who will be by their side, guiding them through instruction and practice throughout their tutoring journey. Get in touch today to learn how Academic Approach can help your student transform into a confident, successful test taker. Learn more at academicapproach.com/dailygist.
You're listening to Crane's Daily Gist with Amy Guth.
Cook County Assessor Fritz Kagi is showing real signs of retaining strong support from the Democratic Party as he begins to campaign for a new term in next year's election. Kagi announced endorsements from U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth and 8 U.S. House members, basically every member of Congress who represents Cook County except Danny Davis and Bobby Rush. Kagi has one known opponent in the Democratic primary so far, Water Reclamation District President Carrie Steele. Kagi's policies of shifting the property tax load from residents to business-owned properties has been controversial with some in the business community. But Kagi and allies say he's doing his job in just reversing inequitable policies set by prior assessors.
The owner of a building leased to one of North Michigan Avenue's biggest and oldest tenants has decided to cash out. UBS Realty Investors has hired a broker to sell the nearly 200,000 square foot building at 737 North Michigan Avenue, where Neiman Marcus has set since 1983. As Crane's Albie Galoon notes in his reporting on the story, that offering may appeal to some investors, but others may be wary of owning property on the Mag Mile, which is awash in vacant retail space after the loss of several tenants through the course of the pandemic thus far. The Mag Mile's vacancy rate jumped to 26% this year, up from just 15% in 2019. That according to Cushman and Wakefield. Yet the Neiman Marcus store has bounced back according to a marketing brochure from Jones Lang LaSalle, the real estate firm hired to broker the sale. The Mag Mile store is the chain's second most profitable location, and its sales year to date are 5% higher than they were for the same period in 2019, according to the brochure, which also said the store is on track to post sales of $123 million or $629 per square foot this year. However, it's unclear what an investor would pay for the store, considering that so few retail properties on North Michigan Avenue have changed hands in the past few years. The Cook County Assessor's Office recently valued the property at $46.1 million. Computer reseller CDW said it has a deal to buy Sirius Computer Solutions for $2.5 billion in cash, and that's the largest acquisition in CDW's history. Lincolnshire-based CDW is buying the company from private equity firm Clayton, Dubilier & Rice. San Antonio-based Sirius's net sales last year were $2.04 billion, according to a release. CDW had net sales of about $20 billion in the 12 months ending June 30th. The combined company would have had $20.5 billion in net sales last year, according to the release, which also said that Sirius has more than 2,600 workers, compared with over 10,500 for CDW. The White House announced that the U.S. plans to open borders to vaccinated travelers on November 8th, which would grant access to millions of people who've been shut out of the country. However, the move will still restrict access to anyone who remains unvaccinated. The move marks the biggest change to U.S. travel policy since the onset of the pandemic, replacing a system that largely prohibited most foreign nationals coming directly from major markets, including Europe, India, Brazil, and China. Airlines severely impacted by the pandemic have applauded the move and have started to build out schedules for winter and beyond. The firm date gives carriers more certainty as they plan for staffing and fuel purchases. And flights between the U.S. and Europe, filled with premium travelers, make up the single most profitable sector of the global aviation market. Carriers on both sides of the Atlantic have been lobbying since mid-2020 for those routes to be reopened, only to see hopes dashed each time there's a surge in infections. However, the move to a vaccine-based entry system brings the U.S. in line with the EU, which started using COVID pass apps at the start of the summer, and the UK, which made the switch in recent weeks. Asian centers like Singapore, which have generally kept tighter curbs in place, have also started to loosen travel rules. For the U.S., the November 8th date also applies to land borders with Canada and Mexico. That's Crane's Daily Gist for now. Check in on our continuous news feed at chicagobusiness.com. And thanks so much to my guest today, Crane's commercial real estate reporter, Danny Ecker. You can follow all of our conversations on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to find your on-demand audio. And remember to rate and review Crane's Daily Gist. You'll also find hashtag Crane's Daily Gist on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Our show is produced by Todd Manley at Earsight Studios. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll meet you right back here next time.